We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, I want to let you know about the websites for the three guests that we just had in the 9:30, the last half hour of Center Stage. We have the hook and ladder, and that is the hook MPLS for Minneapolis.com. The hook MPLS.com if you want more information. And that is the event club. And then also Crooners Lounge and Supper Club. Their website is Crooners Lounge MN for Minnesota.com. Again, that's Crooners Lounge MN.com for tickets. Also, Amsterdam Bar and Hall. You've heard about them. The Amsterdam Bar and Hall.com is the website. Amsterdam Bar and Hall.com. You know what time it is when you hear this music, right? Oh, yeah. It's time for the Mom and Michael Hour. Oh, here we go. Woo! I love this hour. It is my favorite. I get a chance to visit with my son. And it's interesting how it all came together. Before I bring him on, he's not listening right now. I just want y'all to know. I felt like I had invested so much in this child. And so when he got his degree in film and television production, I said, so, don't you think it's time for you to be my film critic? And he agreed. And he loves it just like I do. I'm so fortunate, so blessed, but don't tell him that. All right, here he is right now, Michael Battle, all the way from Los Angeles. How are you, son?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You didn't hear any of that, right? Great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't. Hi, honey.
I kind of did. Is that how it started, though? Because I feel like I came on to talk to you back in the day a few times before it was, like, official. Wow, we kind of just come on and we'd have random conversations, or you'd bring me on to talk about a certain subject on which I could speak that was pertinent to me. And I feel like we did that a few times and before it became an official thing.
Right, before it became an official thing. That is absolutely true. And then I said to you, you know, with all that we have gone through together, I need you to be my film critic. And you said, absolutely. And I really appreciate
it. Can you believe it's been 10 years?
I cannot believe it's been 10 years. It doesn't feel like 10 years.
No, it's been so much fun and it's gone so fast. Also, in terms of time, my 15-year high school reunion is this fall.
How do you feel?
Old.
Come on. 15 years and you feel old? Just wait till it's your 50th.
I know, and every time I mention anything about age, I'm pretty much going to dig a hole for myself, and it's not going to go well.
Right.
But it's just weird when you still feel like a young person on the inside, or rather you have the sense of time that a young person would. And I feel like just not long ago, I was a teenager talking about, you know, colleges or trying to move to Los Angeles, and what would the 18-year-old version of me think that I was doing 15 years later? I mean, that seemed like an eternity back then, and here we are. But this is the sort of language and conversations we've heard from our parents for years, and I guess this is how it starts, because you turn around one day, you blinked, and there goes 15, 20, 30 years.
But maybe, you know, decades ago, they may have thought, okay, I'm getting old. I really am getting old, and I should go quietly into that beautiful night. At the same time, today, it's not like that. I mean, you've got serious challenges in some of the nursing homes because you've got the senior community that's, you know, really having intercourse and enjoying life and partying and that sort of thing. And so can you imagine what it must be like to be 90 years old and to feel like you are 39 years old?
Oh, I'm not sure if some of those issues you mentioned are new. We're humans, so people have been doing things like that at that age for a long time.
Saying is that decades ago, many, many decades, you know, I could take you back 60, 70 years, nursing homes were not that big.
I see.
That wasn't that big of a deal. You know, you kept Aunt Susie in the front of the house, in the living room if you had to, in the hospital bed, right? So it's a whole new industry.
True.
Is what I'm saying.
And yeah, I mean, I've heard that humans are rather in our brains, we stop
humans,
our persona stops aging at a certain point. So,
right.
So each of us have a point at which we say, okay, well, I feel like I'm 25, and then for the rest of your life, you feel the personality of that age. Of course, you change and your personality grows, but
well, your body lets you know that you're not that age.
But it's more mental, though. Yeah, I mean, your body lets you know, but we all have like an emotional stopping point where we kind of stay at that age. For some people, it's their teens, 20s. Others, it's 30s and 40s. So I can imagine someone who stopped in their early 20s, who's now 90, what that must feel like.
Yeah, exactly. Really, that's a remarkable thought, because so many, you know, you go into the stores. I know when women particularly are going through menopause, and they may say, hey, I want to wear a miniskirt with you know, thigh-high boots, and maybe that's my last claim to fame for my youth, you know? But different people go through that, you know, they fight it, whether it's a man who buys a red Corvette or a red Porsche and goes all over town with his sunglasses on and dyes his hair black. You know, we go through moments of saying, I can see that my youth is fleeting, and that has to be uncomfortable. I'm not there yet.
Well, that's a great thing.
Yeah, so if my youth is fleeting, don't tell me.
I definitely won't, but also so
because my siblings will. Don't you tell me.
They'll tell you. I won't do it. I'll just say no. I didn't hear that comment at the top.
Right.
No, Mom, they're not a thing. So yeah, some
right.
go buy Corvettes and some buy, you know, skimpy dresses, and but of course seniors today, many of them don't even have the opportunity to go do those things because they're still in the workforce. They're still out there working because their pensions are gone, or their 401ks didn't turn out the way they wanted to.
Right.
Social
Security is stagnant, you know?
I'm sorry?
Social Security may be stagnant.
Mm-hmm. Or they're still living with their children who are so bogged down with student loan debt that everyone in the household has to work. So I think that age group and what that life looks like will keep evolving. But I hope that when my generation gets there, it doesn't evolve the lingering negative after effects of the last economic crash that we just experienced.
Oh my goodness! And some are saying that we're on the precipice of another one. So I hope that's wrong. I really do hope that's wrong. Michael, with all that is going on, I had a chance to talk about what's happening in the world when it comes to politics, because that's on everybody's minds. And I'm amazed at how far we have come and how far. You know, I talked to a professor about, you know, how do we operate? How does the White House, how does the Congress operate? They're so silent on so much. You know, what are they doing? How is it that we are not getting an account of what is being decided by those leaders that we've put into office? And, you know, when you go silent and we know nothing and there's nothing but conflict in front of us that is being created every day, and you've got, you know, 18 things that are swarming around us and we're trying to pay attention to all of them. It is so ridiculous. Now, you have had a chance to be a part of building a bill, you know, when you were involved in the student government at your high school.
Well, right. Well, that was I made the high school student council at St. Thomas Academy, or mm-hmm. rather revamped what was a dead and gone activity there, and then of course went to Boys State in the Twin Cities, and then Boys Nation in D.C. So I made bills that I practiced the process of what it would take to make a bill at Boys State and Boys Nation, but I can't say that I've gone through the process of making an actual bill in the actual house.
Right, and I was going to make that clear. I apologize, but I was trying to say, you know what it takes. You have learned what it takes for a bill to come through and actually, you know, come to fruition. In seeing what is happening today, how far are we away from what you learned this whole process of government is and what it should be?
I don't think I can answer that question because citizens of any country, I don't think, ever truly know how their government operates, because we're only told what the media and what that government itself chooses to tell us. And so you've heard me mention many times to you about a social contract where we have kind of outsourced our protection and our way of life to our government. And by doing that, we've signed away certain rights. And of course, right now, my generation, most Americans with social media and cameras on our phones and laptops and whatnot, we've signed away more rights now than probably ever before. So I could go and spout off about what I think is happening or how transparent or not the process of making a bill is right now, but that maybe isn't the truth, because my information about the inner secret workings of our government is what I'm allowed to ingest, is what I'm allowed to see. And yes, they're constantly throwing tons of information at us left and right, but part of that is by design, because the more they can scare us and get us to have strong emotional reactions to one thing or another, the more they can get us to vote and act in the way that that particular media outlet wants us to work. Now, not all of it is bad, but I think to try to say this is how it works on the inside without actually being someone who works on the inside wouldn't be a fair assessment or a fair attempt to explain or answer that question.
Okay, then I will make a promise to you. Then I will look into what it takes to go and be a part of the gallery in our state government, since St. Paul is the capital of Minnesota, so it's easy to get there. And when they open its doors to the public so that you can come in and watch how the process works, I think I need to see that. I need to see exactly how that works, how much time is spent. You know, how much time is wasted, in my own humble opinion, after I do a lot of reading on this, and see if we can get a guest on to really talk about that. Because I think we need to know, because there's a part of me that feels like nationally, we're not getting anything done. I mean, I can look back and say, OK, there was the tax thing and there was the new Supreme Court justice. But do we really see what is happening? And I need to look at that from a local perspective first and foremost. So I promise I will do that. How about that?
Sounds like a plan to me.
All right. And then I know that you can't do that because you work, and so there's no way that you could go to something like that. But I encourage you to read up on it so we can discuss both. How about that? California versus Minnesota. Deal?
Deal.
Okay, good enough. Now, you do know, I'm going to ask you, are you ready to run for office yet?
Well, no. Yes, you're going to keep asking that question.
I'm going to keep asking you that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I especially don't think that that's a path for me at this point in time in my career, because I'm putting my efforts elsewhere. But it's not out of the question. You know, it's a thing that I've always considered and thought, okay, that's a decent option, but just not right now. So I applaud those who are doing it right now, who are stepping up all across the country to run for office. But no, it's not for me quite yet. Also, it's just the whole political game is just so nasty right now in a way that it hasn't been in the past, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to go into that, you have to have a passion for it in the same way that I do for entertainment, where I can get through all of the darker elements of the entertainment industry because I love it. I have a passion for it. I feel like if you're going to run for office, you need to believe in what you're doing so much that you can survive the extreme environment that is politics.
Okay, we're going to take a break and come back. And I want to discuss with you, I'm going to read a little bit about what it takes to run for office in California.
Okay.
I think you'll enjoy that, dear. I think you will. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is now 10:21 here at WCCO. Let's make that 10:22. Oh, my goodness. This is the Mom and Michael Hour, and this is one of my favorite songs. Honey, honey, I can see the stars all the way from here. Can't you see the glow on your window pane? Whenever you're near, every time you touch me, I just melt away. Sing it, Beyonce. From ear to ear, 'cause I know, oh, nothing's perfect. All right, all right, all right, Geraldine. Uh-oh, here she comes. But finally, baby, it's you. All right, this is the Mom and Michael Hour. My son, Michael Battle, is joining us, and I am constantly trying to convince him to run for office. If you agree with that, feel free to email me here at WCCO, and I'll make sure he gets that email, that's for sure. All right, welcome back, son.
Thank you so much. You know, I used to not want to run for office because people want to dig into your past and slam your name, and they'll do anything to try to say that you're a bad person. Not that I have any skeletons to hide. That's not the case. It's just so negative to go through that process. But of course, now we've seen that you can do anything. You can cheat on your wife with a porn star and pay her off. You can, you know, do any number of things. You can be racist and misogynistic and horrible, and people will not care. So not that I want those types of people supporting me, but it's weird how Trump, in a way, has still yet encouraged everyone of all colors and all backgrounds, no matter who you are, to run for office.
Wow, I didn't expect that turn of events. How about that?
It's just the truth. Shock it all. Know? And it's like I used to think, oh, well, I shouldn't run until I, you know, I have a law degree, or until I run for smaller offices first and build my experience, that to make sure that I could win that position.
No need for that anymore.
And now it's like, no, I could just be a reality TV star. So as time continues, I find more and more good things that this horrible president has done.
At the same time, Michael, you do know that the qualifications for being president is like three things.
On paper, yes, but in practice, in actuality.
No, of course. I mean, we've learned over the decades, but seriously, it's the same qualifications. Nothing's been added to it. No one says you have to have a college degree.
True, but Americans have always had higher standards, except for now.
Yeah, but higher standards. I'm just saying that anybody can run for that office as long as you follow those three things. And so you are bound to have it. You are bound to get here. And I don't think this is the first time we've gotten here. I think if you go back to the 1800s, I think we would absolutely find that to be very true.
There are others that are more like him. This is the first time in recent times that we had someone actually in the White House who was this deeply unqualified and polarizing.
Right, in recent times. That's true. Okay, so Michael, if you were to run for United States Senator of California, the qualifications are simply this. Every candidate shall be at least 30 years of age. You meet that. A U.S. citizen for 9 years at least. You meet that. And a resident of California on January 3rd, 2019. The date he or she would be sworn into office if elected.
Sure, that's on paper, but we all know in actuality what it takes to get into office is far more than that. And first and foremost, you need huge sums of money to promote yourself and advertise yourself up to a position that high.
Right.
You can start without a lot of cash and have, you know, try to raise money for your smaller grassroots push, but to win those larger offices, it's the same sort of money spend or advertising push, rather, as one would have to do to win an Oscar. I mean, it takes fun.
No, it really doesn't, though. Look at your governor. Your governor didn't do that. If I'm not mistaken, he spent $15,000 on his campaign, and he passed out a whole lot of pamphlets, went door to door, showed up at just about everything. But the people of California asked him to run.
He spent $15,000. You're saying the... Okay.
If I am not mistaken... your governor, Jerry Brown, is that his name? I think his name is?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe he only spent like $15,000 of his own money. Now, I'm sure there were several PACs that came together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure, $15,000 of his own money.
Of his own money.
I'm sure that
but Meg, what is the woman who owned
Meg Whitman?
Meg Whitman spent $100 million of her money.
And lost.
Yes, so it's not always about the money. That's what I'm saying.
No, it is always about the money because, yes, she spent her own money. She spent tons of her own money, and he spent a very small amount of his own money. But in both cases, they had outside people also spending huge amounts of their own money on them. So it's not you don't have to be a wealthy person to do it, but you do need to get a lot of people to support you financially because if nothing else, you have to cut through the noise. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, there's constant noise being thrown at people through media, online, on social media, mailers, et cetera, so to get your message out, to even make sure that people can hear what you're offering, what you have to say, you have to have large amounts of funds to make sure that that message can get to them.
Okay. I just believe with social media and so much more, Michael, I don't know if that's correct anymore. Maybe I'll have someone on to tell me if that's true or not, an expert to say, no, Michael is right. You got to have the big pack money behind you because, you know, I'm just hoping that'll change. I'm really, really hoping that'll change.
Why is that?
Because I just don't think we need it. Money is just, you know, when money drives the bus, then we're going to fail. We're going to run out of gas and we're going to fail. I just think.
But money has always driven the bus.
Right, but there's coming. We're in a new day, and I
are
think
we?
We really are, Michael. We are in a new day.
Here's the thing: money drives the bus because it's because marketing is expensive. It's not that people want to use money just because it's fun. It's more of a pragmatic thing. If you want to tell people, as I mentioned earlier, if you want them to hear your message, it has to get to them. Back in the day, when everyone read newspapers, you would just have the head of some paper say, great.
Endorsement.
Print. You know, even without the endorsement, they would just agree to print your message in their paper. And most people who could read would read the paper, and boom, your message is out there.
Right. And the church I grew up in, they would allow, you know, all of the sides, you know, each candidate who was running in a different party, each of them got 5 minutes in front of the church. And the pastors never, ever told us who to vote for. Never. They always said, just make sure you vote.
Right, but again, so that probably didn't cost them any money. That was them talking in front of a church group and presenting their stance. But that was probably for a much smaller election. But if you're running for a statewide or national election, mm-hmm. that's a lot of people that you have to get your message in front
of.
Millions of individuals need to know what you're all about.
Yeah, got to go to every county. Mm-hmm.
Right, so you can, you know, stomp in every county and do a whole bus tour and do all of that. People need to know that you're going to be there, and to do that just through social media or just through a mailer is not necessarily going to work. And on top of that, even if you are just using mails or social media, those things cost money too. So it's always driven politics, and it's always going to be a part of marketing, unless marketing were free, which I hope it never is, because that's what drives entertainment also. So I wouldn't have a job if that was the case.
Well, all I know is you are smart, you are kind, you have compassion, you know how to let anger drive you to do the right thing. You know, you don't take that anger and just make a decision to do whatever the consequences are. You really do think it through. And that's the type of leader I want. It's not that a politician should never get angry, by no means. Sometimes that has to be the driving force for you to get to the right decision. But I just think that you have what it takes. I have said this to you since high school.
You're also biased, though, and I love you for it. You're my biggest fan. You're my mom, and I love you. And I'm not saying you aren't right, and I'm not mentioning all this to say that I'll never do it. It's just not currently the right option for me. But I think there are many sons out there right now who are like, yeah, our moms want us to do this and that, too. And our moms think we'd be great doing X, Y, and Z. And you know what? It kind of makes my whole day. So I appreciate
it. Would you like to know how much a senator makes of California?
You know, those numbers, I can guarantee you, aren't going to be entirely correct, because their salary does not fully encompass their net worth or the money behind them. But yes, by all means.
That's the truth. That's the truth. All right, Michael, we got to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You know what time it is when you hear this music, right? Somebody's got to do it. Dirty, nasty, stanky work. Hollywood. Uh-huh. I don't have to do it. My son get a chance to do it. And he happens to enjoy it, by the way. He really does love the whole film industry, all of it, documentaries, all of it. And he is joining us to talk movies. How you doing, son?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Man, I don't know how you keep up with all of it. There's so many movies that keep coming out, you know?
They're all over the place, and I love it because I see a movie every single weekend, nearly.
Yeah, but nearly every weekend, there's like two new movies that have entered the fray. And this time, we've got four in the top 10. No, top 11. Four new movies. So it really is quite remarkable.
Four new films, but only a couple of those films are actually ones that are going to make big amounts of money. And films are usually counter-programmed against each other. So if you're interested in movies, you want to see movies, there aren't many weekends where there's more than one in a given weekend that you want to see. Of course, as we approach award seasons, that changes because all these great films come out at the same time, and they're usually dramas. And people who like movies want to see all of those. But this time of year, through most of the year, it's rare that you have, like I just said, two films that are in the same genre,
right,
going for the same audience.
Right. Well, I have to first mention, before we jump into all of these genres, Black Panther made $1 billion. Did you squeal?
I squealed. I have been waiting for the billion-dollar Black Panther headline for a long time. I think I mentioned to you it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in just 26 days. Let's just think about that. $1 billion for Black Panther in 26 days.
How big is this? I mean, is this like unusual, totally unusual?
Hugely unusual. I think it's I have to go look at the numbers as to how many films have crossed that mark, and even fewer have crossed that mark this fast. So we're talking like top five, films ever.
Well, I'm looking at an article that says the last time a film managed to reach that, what Black Panther did, was Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Correct. So there are a few films in their entire run in history that have crossed a billion, and even fewer that have done so in such a short period of time. And they're usually a title like Star Wars or Avatar. In fact, those may be the only two who have done it this fast.
I'll have to don't say that. Avatar. I start itching.
Avatar is still up there. I know. I'm not a huge Avatar fan, but
nope.
It's up there.
Nope,
so
nope.
These numbers are extraordinary. I mean, these are huge, huge numbers, game-changing numbers, as I mentioned to you at length last time we spoke. But the real story for this weekend is that the only territory that Black Panther had left for its international release was China. China, historically, does not – people in China don't go see films with black and brown people in the lead.
Right.
They're just not a huge fan of them.
You talked about that last Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So the real test was, what was it going to do in China, and you know, were people going to like this film?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, here we are. It happened, and it opened to $66.5 million in China, which is a really strong opening for that territory. So it proved, or rather disproved, the norm that we've had in Hollywood since its existence. Since America was putting movies in China, this disproved all of those metrics and all that history. Because it's not just black and brown faces, it's nearly an all-black cast, and they still want to go see it. The pre-ticket sales in China for Black Panther surpassed several other Marvel films, so there was a huge anticipation for it. People were excited about this film and ran out to go see it. This is the first time in film history that has ever happened. So it's a big deal.
Wow, that's incredible. Let's talk a little bit about Disney. Of course, Disney, Buena Vista, of course, produced Black Panther and put that out, as well as Star Wars and so many other franchises. But A Wrinkle in Time is new. Great book. When I first saw that this was coming out, I thought, will I go see this? I don't want anything to mess up what I feel about the movie. Who is the producer of that film?
The producer of Wrinkle in Time, I'll have to go look at his actual name. His last name is Whitaker. No relation to Forrest Whitaker.
Okay.
I'm forgetting his first name. He's the same producer.
I looked this up, right? I'm looking at it on Box Office Mojo, and
Dragon.
It's nowhere
there. Was some other
there.
Disney film he was on. Was it Pete's Dragon?
I don't show any information about who is the producer of this. There's no information about who's acting in it. Nothing.
Sorry. It's Catherine Hand and Jim Whitaker. Jim Whitaker, who's doing the remake of Labyrinth coming up, which, of course,
oh,
I'm
wow.
going to get you on that because I love Labyrinth.
Right.
Yes,
one of our favorites.
Yeah, I was correct, though, that he did produce Pete's Dragon and a few other hits back in the day. So they're the producers on this film. As you mentioned, it was a book that I loved back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've heard that people have been trying to make a movie from this film for years.
They said it was very difficult, right?
It was hard to do. So we've seen other films that have come from a longstanding popular IP, like John Carter, also from Disney, that was a huge box office flop. I think it was called Valerian. That one came out a couple years ago. They tried to make that movie also for decades. It didn't happen. That was another huge box office flop. And so here we have A Wrinkle in Time. And I think they were a bit smarter and didn't spend quite as much money on this picture because they were unsure of what it was going to do. And there was definitely a lot of anticipation and also hesitation about what it might do this weekend. I think it was very, very smart to put this film out in the fourth weekend of Black Panther, which Disney did not know that Black Panther was going to be as huge of a monster worldwide hit as it was. But in the case that it was a big hit, having A Wrinkle in Time in the fourth weekend, and if A Wrinkle in Time didn't do well, they could blame it on Black Panther being number one again in its fourth weekend, which, by the way, it's the first Marvel film ever to be number one four weeks.
Oh, my gosh. No kidding. Okay, so it made, Wrinkle in Time made almost $40 million. We don't know how much it costs to make it.
$103 million to make.
$103 million?
Yes, that actually is not that much money, though.
Well, of course not to you, because the big blockbuster's crazy, because I think Black Panther was 200 and something, wasn't it?
It was twice that almost.
Okay, so A Wrinkle in Time, though, wow, $103 million? From the trailers that I've seen, it didn't look like that to me. So you had a chance to go see it. Tell us about it.
So I came into this film with extremely low expectations because I had seen the trailers. I wasn't too impressed by it. And I was like, okay, it has some cool costumes, tons of CGI, but it just felt like this film wasn't going to be compelling. I also heard some not so great word of mouth on this one, but I went in there and said, you know what, I want to go see it. I want to be able to talk about it, especially if you have two films from the same studio going against each other, both with black faces in them.
Right.
This is unheard of. This
right.
has never really happened where we have films of this caliber and size with this much money behind them. Again, going up against each other. Counter-programmed, as I mentioned earlier, one for females, one for males. Of course, Black Panther went for quadrant, meaning that it was for the whole family. But that's what Disney does. The side note, the Disney Channel is marketed toward young girls, and Disney XD is marketed toward young men. And they do the same thing with their films. They have Disney princesses and princes or are young men who are adventurers. So they're always giving you content for both of your children, your young boys and young girls at the same time.
Okay.
Here we're seeing it in the box office on a level that we haven't really seen in the past. All of that said, I went to go see it, and it's not actually a good movie, and it's not the best written or acted or directed. None of it is really superb or worth mentioning. However, it's really relaxing.
Really?
It's really pretty. And I just relaxed. I was in my seat in the theater, and I kind of just gave in to the movie. And I was like, okay, well, this isn't the most compelling. And that could have been better, or that scene was a little weak, or that acting is not great, or that dialogue is a little stunted. But it's a kid's movie. Maybe I'm just too old. And before I knew it, I was just kind of lulled into this, oh, it's so pretty, and the flowers talk, and oh, look, now we're over here, and oh, that's sad. Look what happened. Before I knew it, it was done.
It sounds like somebody was smoking something. I mean, really, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about making the film.
and here's the thing. Like, I cracked the same joke because I don't do any drugs, but if I did, this would be the movie to do them to. It is really pretty. And the
wow.
costumes are beautiful. I think Oprah's talent is a bit wasted in the film. Not her fault. There's just not much there in the character for her to really dig into, but
mm-hmm.
she looks amazing. Again, her costumes are extraordinary. Reese Witherspoon is intensely annoying the entire time.
Oh.
But again, not her fault because the character was clearly written that way and she was directed that way. The kids are good enough. The lead girl in the movie, she has a couple scenes that are really touching and well acted. The young man is... he can be charming at times, but there are other times where the dialogue seemed to get ahead of him. But it just never really hits that Disney magic where you go, yeah, I'm deeply enveloped in this story, and I'm in this world, and I want to see a sequel, or I want to go see it again. It never achieves that level. But I feel like they knew that when they saw the first cut months and months and months before this film ever hit theaters. I mean, by the time we're seeing it, they've seen the final edit quite some time before, or at least a rough edit, and they have an idea of what this film is going to do. So that people went to go see this a decent amount. I mean, this isn't a bad opening for a film that
was it a full theater when you were there?
It was. The one I was in was almost entirely sold out with families of all colors and young girls and young boys.
Yeah, because it's still
adults.
A popular book. It's really popular.
It's popular, and the trailers, I imagine, are moderately effective for families to want to go see it. And there isn't a lot of family fanfare out there to go see in theaters right now. So I can see how it pulled the amount of viewers it did for the opening weekend, but it is, by the numbers, definitely not a great opening for this film.
Wow. I'm really surprised to hear that. And by the way, it's competing with either – would you say it's competing with Peter Rabbit for family?
Absolutely. It's competing with that, but I think in a very different way, because Peter Rabbit is a children's comedy and this is a children's fantasy.
Yes.
So a different type of kid fanfare. So, and people aren't really talking about Peter Rabbit that much in the box office anymore right now. I do want to add, though, A Wrinkle in Time has only 42% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's considered a rotten score,
wow.
100 being great and 0 being terrible. Compare that to Black Panther, which, of course, is at 97%. It was even higher. It's gone down to 97. So if it opened up to, I think, $33 million or so, and they spent $100 million making the movie, let's say the P&A, print and advertising budget on this film was $50 million, maybe a little more. I mean, it was a pretty big push on this. Even if they spent upwards of 60, that puts them all in $160 million. It might might not break even domestically, but internationally, I could see this film potentially coming in around, you know, 160
right.
even by the end. So we probably won't see a sequel, but it might not be a write-off at the end of the year financially.
What I have not been able to glean from you in all of that conversation is it worth going to see?
I think it is. I think it is. I think go see this movie on the big screen when you want to just relax and you want to come off of the intense, heavy, complicated and beautiful Oscar films that we watched. And if you want to just kind of lay back and enjoy this film and, you know, give into it, go do it. I just saw Dark Crystals in theaters last week. They put it back in theaters
anticipation
of the new Dark Crystal that's being made, I believe, on Netflix.
And was it as creepy as you remember?
It's a little creepy, but I really enjoy it. But I think what stood out was how simple the story was. It is a intensely straightforward, face value fantasy story that even has like an extended voiceover at the beginning just to give you context. And there isn't a lot of dialogue. I mean, the protagonist, when he wants to make a choice, he literally announces, "I'm going to do it." And he goes and does it. And they set up the stakes of what his mission is, who he has to talk to accomplish the mission, and what the stakes are if he doesn't succeed in one conversation at the beginning of the movie. And then he goes and does the exact steps that they offered. And there's maybe one twist, but it really was laid out as a kid's film to make sure that kids could fully digest what was happening. So this book was beautifully complicated, and I feel like maybe they tried to oversimplify it a little too much, and that's why we have the version of this film we have right now. But at the same time, it's digestible, it's straightforward, and it's pretty, and it's enjoyable. And so if you like movies, you like colorful, relaxing films, if you partake in recreational whatnots, go ahead and go check it out.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to ask you, talking about beautiful and something interesting, The Shape of Water. I really need to talk to you about that. You know, I talked to some of my siblings who went to go see it, and I just need to one more time hear you say that, you know, what you said before. So we're going to take a break. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour with my son, Michael Battle. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is now 10:51 here at WCCO. All right, we are coming back and wrapping this whole thing up about movies, and Michael had a chance to go and see A Wrinkle in Time. He does suggest that you go and see it, that it's really worth it, and it can be really relaxing. So if your children are out of control, take them to see the movie. That's what I say. Michael, before I let you go, I want to talk two things. First of all, The Shape of Water. I've had someone, you know, in the family say, hated it. And I had another person say, it wasn't that bad.
I'm right in between those two. As I mentioned to you when I first saw the film, I did not love that movie. It's very well done. It's charming at times, but I went in there wanting this deeply emotive experience. I wanted to really feel the experience of its protagonist, and I wanted to be crying at the end, as I heard happen at film festivals when it first came out. People were sobbing and gave it a 20-minute long standing ovation, but I wasn't moved to any of those emotions or reactions and was kind of like, oh, okay, I saw it. So I don't really need to see it again. I very much am inspired by the art and the creatures and the music and the world. Octavia Spencer, that's the funniest I've ever seen her. I mean, she really just was great. All the acting performances were really good.
Uh-huh.
But the movie itself didn't move me that much, and I didn't think it deserved Best Picture.
Okay. Can you hear that music playing, by the way?
A little bit,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, great. As long as it's a little bit. So I just need to know from you, because I'm probably never going to see this movie. Does she actually procreate with the beast, the fish, being fish person?
Well, you know,
I suppose we don't want to ruin the...
That would be a spoiler, and okay. I don't want to give away spoilers, so I think you should just check it out.
Well, I think you just did. So that's great. I know now. I'm never going to see it. Never going to see it. And, you know, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel said it best. Was it Jimmy Kimmel who was the host of the Oscars?
No, it was...
who was it?
I'm forgetting his name. Oh, my goodness. Because now you put Jimmy Kimmel's face in my mind.
I know.
So I'm blanking on... Or is his name Jimmy Kimmel?
Come on, really?
Yes, it is. I'm sorry.
You're oh, my gosh.
Honestly, it is.
Is it? You sure? Are you sure?
It is. Yes, Jimmy Kimmel hosted the Oscars. I'm thinking of the other dude from Saturday Night Live, Jimmy Fallon.
Uh-huh.
People get them confused all the time.
Uh-huh, but I didn't. I just need you to know. People might get it confused.
I did not.
Okay, but he said it best. He says, it's so bad in the dating world for women that now they have to turn to a fish.
Exactly.
Wow. That'll wake you up, huh? For the single women, it'll wake you up.
I wanted to mention really quick, A Wrinkle in Time is better than Tomorrowland, that film that you recall that came out in 2015. That was horrible.
Everything's better than Tomorrowland.
It was just pure garbage. It was so bad it made me angry. It was Disney rides shown in short films thrown together. I mean, it was just not done well. But
pure garbage, though, Michael, really? Pure garbage? Okay, I think that's harsh.
That's too harsh. Some people did like it, but I really was deeply angered by it because it was just so shoddy in terms of how it was put together. And it was like a giant commercial for new rides, and they wanted it to be this big new thing, and it just could not get there. But A Wrinkle in Time is much better than Tomorrowland. And Tomorrowland opened to about the same numbers that A Wrinkle in Time did, though it cost more money to make, and it went on to make $209 million worldwide.
$209 million. How about that?
Well, they spent $190 making it. So they spent $90 million less on A Wrinkle in Time. It opened about the same its opening weekend. If it tracks the same throughout its weeks as Tomorrowland, you know, again, it could land even with P&A breaking even, but it would not be considered a big success.
And how much do you think Shape of Water made, a cost to make? That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, the Shape of Water was definitely low budget. So I'm seeing a budget of $19 million. So we can round it up to $20 million. There probably wasn't a huge amount of advertising at all. So they're probably only $25 million total in on that film. And then, of course, domestically, it's made almost 60 so far, and it's made an extra 52 worldwide.
Well, Michael, you've talked so much about Black Panther and how wonderful it is. I mean, you've been really convincing. I mean, I've gone to see it twice, and you know it's really hard to get me into the movie theaters. And so because of that, Shaletta Brundage, who's here in the studio with me, had a chance to – she works at Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, writes for them as well.
Yes.
And tell us how you came to interview Michael.
Well, I'm doing a four-part series on the Black Panther, kind of how the movie is impacting the society at large, even after the credits are over and roll. And so the first part was the impact on young girls, and I talked to Dr. Verna Price. And the second was how to raise our sons to be kings, and I talked to Tony Carter.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I had, because her son Melvin is the first African-American mayor of the city of St. Paul. And so I had a whole next segment planned. I was going to talk to Marsha Pitts Phillips about the impact that the movie's having on the media and the perception of African and African Americans, and had my interview all set up. And then I heard Michael talking to you last week about Killmonger and T'Challa and how every man is both, and you have to decide who you're going to be in that moment.
Yeah,
and
that was a great comparison.
It was a wonderful story, and it reminded me quickly of something that happened with my husband. We were at a restaurant, one of the kids was crying, and I have three children with autism.
Yes.
And one of the kids was crying because of some loud noises, and a man from across the room yelled a racial slur at the two-year-old daughter.
Oh my goodness.
And at that instance, my husband, who graduated from medical school, got up, and I knew he was going to go over and confront the man. And I was like, where did this come from? How did he have this, you know, in him?
Right.
And listening to Michael just broke it down and explained it all. So I canceled Marsha and did a feature article on Michael and that comparison with the two in every man, especially African-American men, and how you manage that.
Who will you choose to be?
Right. And it's going to be featured in this Thursday's edition of the newspaper. So thank you, Michael, so much.
And that's Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. If you can let us know what their website is, I want to make sure I get it right. Is it MSR?
It's spokesman-recorder.com, but I can double check.
Can you look that up? You can see it online. Or please pick up the newspaper and maybe even become a subscriber to the paper. It's really great. I love it. And they've been in business for a long time. One of the few black newspapers that still
exist.
Yeah,
it's spokesman-recorder.com, and it's one of the first African-American newspapers in the country.
Yeah, and Michael's picture will be in there. So many of you have asked me about him, so you get a chance to see what he looks like. And it's really great, Michael. Your mother's so proud of you. All right,
thank
son,
you.
I got to say goodbye. And I'm so sorry we've run out of time, but I love you so much.
Oh, always a pleasure. No worries. I love you so much, too.
I have no worries because you're going to make me proud as a U.S. senator. Thank you so much. Good night, son. All right. Good night, everyone. It's been a pleasure. See you next Sunday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.